This is Farms Food Future, a podcast that's good for you, good for the planet, and good for the farmers, brought to you by the International Fund for Agricultural Development. I'm Brian Thompson. In this month's programme, the latest on how rural communities in the developing world are dealing with the COVID-19 crisis from IFAD's Associate Vice President, Marie Hager. We also have our newly minted UN Goodwill Ambassadors for IFAD, Idris and Sabrina Elba. They have news on the IFAD facility launched to deal with the impacts of the crisis. And we're celebrating World Environment Day, talking to IFAD's Environment, Climate and Social Inclusion Director, Margarita Astralaga. She'll tell us just how to balance the biodiversity with the development. And our reporter Rene Castro talks to the experts at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization about what impacts agriculture is having on biodiversity. We have the latest on why land rights are so important with Harold Liversage. And there's more. We have Italian celebrity chef Carlo Cracco telling us all about his experiences visiting IFAD projects around the world and just why he thinks governments should be investing. And more cooking on a tin can from IFAD's Recipes for Change chefs Lance Sito in Fiji and our newest celebrity chef Bella Gil in Brazil. Remember, we want to hear from you. What do you think about our stories and who do you want us to be talking to? So please get in touch with me at podcasts@ifad.org. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast via your favourite podcast platform. And please rate us. The COVID-19 crisis is calming down in some areas, but the danger hasn't passed. That danger is to health through potential second waves and also to economies. Food supplies and the role of agriculture are at the front of the popular consciousness in a way we haven't seen since the Second World War some 75 years ago. Marie Hager is Associate Vice President at IFAD. She explained how IFAD's dealing with the current new normal.
COVID-19 greatly affects our operations. You know, travel restrictions, social distancing, it requires that we work in completely new ways. And we do have to change also many of the programs that we are working on. So right now we are repurposing existing projects and programs. Probably at least for the time being, we are repurposing 100 programs in 65 countries. And the idea is to keep things going, adjusting, and make sure that we don't lose what we have invested up to now. Then secondly, we are intensifying policy dialogues with many governments. We do that often jointly with our partners in the UN, like FAO. And the idea is to make sure that there are national responses that make sure that food is both being produced and get to the markets and to the consumers. Then thirdly, we have a rapid response that we call the Rural Poor Stimulus Facility, which has four components. It provides input to farmers, small-scale farmers, like seeds and fertilizer. It supports access to markets. We're contributing to keeping value chains open. There's also an element there of direct financial support to preserve services and jobs. And there's an element also on digital agricultural services, because we are, of course, experiencing that the digital way of working is what is going to be the future. And you can say that the COVID-19 just makes us push forward with things that were already considered as wise things to do. So it's a major challenge for the organization to adopt and adjust. But I think it's fair to say that we are doing okay up to now, but we got to be very conscious globally that the COVID-19 health crisis doesn't develop to a severe food crisis.
Why in the current situation is IFAD's mandate more important, would you say, than before?
This pandemic is having devastating impacts on our societies and economies. There is really a huge, huge risk that the health crisis will transform into a food crisis. And IFAD's mission is to invest in small-scale producers and other rural people to improve their livelihoods and resilience. And it is therefore more important than ever that we make sure that food production among the small-scale producers is ongoing. I think it's fair to say that investing in small-scale agriculture is a prerequisite for a sound financial and economic recovery in many countries. And it's also worth noticing that economic growth in agriculture is considered to be 2 to 3 times more effective at reducing poverty and food insecurity than growth in other sectors. So it's very important now that we encourage government, foundations, and rich individuals to contribute to make sure that our food production among the small-scale producers can be kept up. Because after all, these small-scale producers, they contribute to almost 50% of calories globally.
We have International Biodiversity Day and then World Environment Day coming up this month. While building resilience is top of IFAD's agenda, why is it so important to take into consideration biodiversity, nature, all that sort of stuff?
Well, if we speak about biodiversity, biodiversity is the raw material that we need when we breed new plants that can adapt to new conditions. And it's extremely important that we are able to make the plants that feed us adapted to, for example, higher temperature. Climate change is really challenging food production. And if we are not able to develop plants that can stand higher temperature, can stand higher salinity in the soil, can take a more unpredictable weather, we are, as a global community, in deep trouble. So this biodiversity is actually a treasure trove of miracles. It's amazing what you can do also by traditional breeding to develop plants that can stand new conditions. And that's why we need them to make sure that we safeguard the 4,500 varieties of potatoes or the 1,000 varieties of banana or the 125,000 varieties of wheat, because each of these varieties have different traits. And when you breed, you want to combine different traits to develop plants that can stand whatever nature, whatever society requires. And there's a big discussion in the food security world these days, of course, related to nutrition. And biodiversity can also be used to develop more nutritious plants. We know that among, let's say, the 1,000 varieties of banana, there are banana varieties that have higher nutritional value. And we need to make sure that we don't lose any of these varieties. For each variety we lose options for the future. So putting biodiversity on the agenda is essential for so many things. It's essential for coping with climate change, is essential for having more nutritious food systems, and it's definitely also important and necessary to produce more food and more affordable food, which the world absolutely needs in the time ahead.
Thanks to IFAD's Associate Vice President, Marie Hager. Coming up, we hear from IFAD's new Goodwill Ambassadors. World-famous actor Idris and his actress, model, activist wife, Sabrina Elba, have launched an appeal for IFAD's $200 million coronavirus relief fund for rural communities. The Goodwill Ambassadors to IFAD are calling for international action to prevent economic shocks caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. With $40 million in seed money from IFAD, the multi-donor COVID-19 Rural Poor Stimulus Facility aims to raise at least an additional $200 million from governments, foundations and the private sector. This will help rural people in developing countries continue to grow their crops, keep their businesses open and maintain access to financial services and markets as their countries go into lockdown and movements are restricted. IFAD has recently seen in some countries affected by the pandemic that food prices are already rising, with productivity and household incomes falling. IFAD's already at work securing food supply chains in a number of countries by ensuring farmers can access seeds and other inputs. It's also helping with the purchase and storage of produce and working with governments to keep transport routes open to farmers so they can sell their goods. It's hoped that these measures will help avert a potential food and hunger crisis, one that would have particularly harsh effects on vulnerable people in developing countries. Before the pandemic hit, IFAD's new ambassadors Idris and Sabrina visited an IFAD-supported project in Sierra Leone. They were both asked what message they wanted to get across to governments.
I mean, I think just speaking up, just having the courage to really just like come here and telling people that, like, come see what's happening, speak up, don't be afraid to speak up, tell your sister, your brother, your neighbor. I think we need to start putting pressure on governments and organizations and private sector as well to really come here and help with the issues that are actually affecting the rest of the world as well. Climate change is an issue globally, not just for Africans. These are things that we need to tackle as an international community. I think trying to get that messaging across, that's the reason we're here. We're both Africans, we're very close to Africa. We want to live in Africa and we care very much about the soil here. So being able to lend our voices, we hope that others do the same.
To world leaders, I would, you know, say quite honestly, look, if you're watching this interview at the moment, you have no reason to care for Sierra Leone or Africa, except you're a leader, you know. You're a leader for not only your country and your countrymen, but for other leaders and other people. So therefore, the whole world looks towards our leaders, whether you're a leader of your country or our country. So as a leader, lead. You know what I mean? Like, the world, a lot of people are poor and can't eat. Change it, you know, donate. You know, tell your countrymen to donate. To African leaders, I would say, let's step it up. You know, if you're an African leader and you're watching this interview, you have no reason to care what I say, but you should be thinking about what China, what America, what Russia think of you and what you're doing for your own people. You're a leader and you're leading Africa and Africa's starving. It doesn't make any sense. You have the power to change it, as we do, and we should, you know. And it's not about giving your own personal money. It's about exactly what I'm saying, lead. Like, be a leader, be the head of the group and feed the people behind you. That's the points of leadership. So that's my message. That's what I would say is, like, step it up. You know, don't be a leader that's just making your own pockets richer. Be a leader that feeds your community, you know. And that doesn't mean that you don't eat. It means that you can make other people eat. And whether that's educating people to teach them to how to food to grow their own food, put some money into that. That's what I would say, you know.
Thanks to IFAD's UN Goodwill Ambassadors, Idris and Sabrina Elba. Up next, we look at how balancing biodiversity with food security is the way forward, more now than ever before. World Environment Day takes place every year on June the 5th. It's the United Nations flagship day for promoting worldwide awareness and action for the environment. Over the years, it's grown to be the largest global platform for environment public outreach and is celebrated by millions of people in more than 100 countries. Margarita Astralaga is the director of IFAD's Environment, Climate and Social Inclusion Division. This year's World Environment Day is celebrating biodiversity as its theme. But in a world that's facing up to new challenges in the post-pandemic landscape, how should we go about balancing the sometimes diverse demands of agriculture versus the environment? As Margarita explains, it's all about balance.
Well, balancing agriculture with nature is indispensable for sustainability, because ecosystems are the ones that support life in Earth. And if we don't support those ecosystems, such as clean water, healthy soils, insects, birds, plants, we will not really be able to have sustainable food systems. So an additional, of course, these ecosystems are extremely important from the perspective of climate change. So we do need to ensure that the ecosystems are healthy so that we can increase the resilience of those ecosystems to deal with the climate shocks and the climate crisis.
So this year's World Environment Day is being hosted by Colombia. As a Colombian yourself, how important is protecting biodiversity in relation to agriculture?
Well, as you know, Colombia is one of the 17 mega diverse countries. And it's probably the second second highest biodiversity in the world after Brazil. So we have thousands of species that are endemic to Colombia. We have we are the richest country in orchids and birds, and we have a large percentage of mammals and different species of plants and trees. So we, if we don't really protect our biodiversity, the future of the country will be at stake. Unfortunately, the country has been degrading its environment for a long time. And according to WWF, the degradation of ecosystems in Colombia is causing a third of plants in Colombia to be threatened, and about 50% of animals. Large part of this degradation has been caused by deforestation, also by mining and extracting industries. But agriculture is an important element in this deforestation, particularly for large agriculture farms. So understanding the importance of biodiversity, I would say that what Colombia has done is in the last few years is very impressive, making sure that they mainstream biodiversity in every aspect of agriculture. Because Colombia was and has been a country that has been exporting food for many, many decades. And it's an important employment source. So what is important is to ensure that agriculture is done in a sustainable manner. And for that, they have designed very interesting incentives linked to payment for ecosystem services, so that this conservation of biodiversity is guaranteed through this payment for what nature, all the benefits that nature is giving, not only to the people, but also to the ecosystems themselves and for the economic activities. So in the case of Colombia, it's very important also to take into account that Colombia has about 1.5 million indigenous people who depend on these resources. And there are about 700,000 small family farms. And many of those farms are really subsistence farms. And this biodiversity loss that is not caused by them makes them extremely vulnerable. So that is why Colombia is investing in agricultural biodiversity and improving also the way of doing business, the way of managing water, of managing soils, and making sure that we have these very important insects that are key for pollination and also making an effort to have genetically diverse crops, which is not always easy.
Next year, Margarita, the UN is going to launch the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration. How do you think IFAD is working in its projects to contribute to this?
Well, I think we as IFAD have a key role to play in this, because we know how severely degraded our agricultural land around the world is. In fact, due in many cases to monoculture, in other cases, excessive use of agrochemicals, in others, because of the way itself that agriculture has been done. So in our case, we are supporting smallholder farmers to really adopt sustainable practices to manage land, soil, water, and also increasingly we are making efforts to ensure that biodiversity is conserved and protected. So restoration, of course, in this case of degraded lands, is extremely important. And we have already started working a lot in this area through many projects. Many of these projects have also the added importance that we are working, for example, with communities, to ensure that communities have the capacities to restore and manage their woodlands or their forest lands. We are also working with the communities to have, for example, no grazing zones. In other countries, it's really promoting the restoration of the forest, dividing the use of the land, one, to be used for agriculture production, that in some cases it might be livestock or other or crops, and the rest to really be restored to be able to use this land maybe in 5 or 10 years' time in a more efficient and effective way.
And that was Margarita Astralaga. More information on World Environment Day can be found at worldenvironmentday.global. Meanwhile, you can find out more about what the International Fund for Agricultural Development is all about by going to our website. That's www.ifad.org. And you can also find more podcasts at the same address /podcast. Coming up, we hear from Philip Audebert and Jihai Kwon about agriculture and its impacts on biodiversity. In order to develop the agriculture sector and improve food security sustainably, we need to do this in balance with nature, i.e. biodiversity. Philip Audebert and Jihai Kwon are economists working with the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. They've developed something called the Exact Biodiversity Tool that measures the impact of agriculture on biodiversity. Our reporter, René Castro, recently spoke with them and started out by asking Philip, how can agriculture impact biodiversity and what are the consequences, especially for food security?
Well, our world is connected more than we can ever imagine. The variety of plant and animal life around us and the way they connect and interact make up our biodiversity. And without these connections, we wouldn't have the food we eat today. Nor would life as we know be possible. But biodiversity is being lost at an alarming rate. When we come to realize how essential it is for our lives, it might already be too late to act. And today only 9 crops account for 66% of total crop production. Our forests are shrinking, and as they disappear, so do the plants, insects, and animals they host. And without bees and other pollinators, many of the foods we eat would disappear. One could hardly imagine eating apples, chocolate or cherries, carrots, or as we all do, drink coffee or even tea. And so biodiversity also provides other ecosystem services which are directly or indirectly linked to our food security. And so biodiversity helps maintaining healthy soils, controlling pests, and providing habitat for wildlife that are vital to food production and agricultural livelihoods. Many of the drivers that have negative impacts on biodiversity, including over-exploitation, over-harvesting, pollution, overuse of external inputs, and changes in land and water management, are at least partially caused by inappropriate agricultural practices.
Thank you, Philippe. Jihai, can I ask you, by better understanding the impact agriculture has on biodiversity, we are in part way to understanding the problems. Now, what about the solutions?
Well, our actions today can help preserve biodiversity and help secure our food of tomorrow. Now, there are many ways to protect our tiny and bigger heroes which make up our biodiversity. On an individual scale, we can help protect our biodiversity by buying more local and seasonal food and to diversify our diet. But that won't be enough. In order for us to protect the biodiversity of this planet, there's an urgent need for a concerted action on an international level. Deforestation, land degradation, and unsustainable management of agricultural lands make up the bulk of biodiversity loss. The land use changes and unsustainable land management practices need to be addressed through bold action, and people can help in this regard. They can become more aware of the status of their local biodiversity and advocate for the protection of biodiversity to influence decision making.
Thank you, Jihai. Philippe, what is the Eggs Act tool and how can it be used to protect biodiversity?
Well, Renee, it is precisely actually this last point on influencing the decision-making that Jihai made, where the Eggs Act carbon balance tool for biodiversity comes into play. The Eggs Act biodiversity tool is a tool that quantifies the biodiversity impact of project policies and investments. It not only quantifies a concept that is abstract, but has the potential to provide decision makers with a set of easily comprehensible policy indicators to help make informed decisions on possible biodiversity risks, biodiversity loss, and management practices. For example, the tool will give you the area of biodiversity loss that can be avoided through project implementation and the avoided social cost of biodiversity through the project. Not only can users adjust their project activities depending on the different results they obtain, but the tool also aids users to choose project sites that may result in the lowest negative or highest positive biodiversity impact. More than anything, together with the quantitative assessment and the qualitative appraisal, we can retrieve information that is useful and helpful in designing projects and policies.
Thank you. That is very interesting. How do you envision, however, the use of this application in IFAD-funded projects?
Well, as Philip mentioned, one of the key objectives of the tool is to provide policy indicators that are more accessible and comprehensible for decision makers. We know for certain that by degrading our natural environment, society has to bear considerable costs, and yet we don't know how much this damage or cost precisely is. But what if we were to put a monetary value or price behind biodiversity? Exact biodiversity includes a so-called social cost of biodiversity avoided, which is the cost that would be incurred to society if biodiversity were to be lost. Social cost of biodiversity avoided can be used as a supplementary indicator to the cost of carbon and can be included in the economic and financial analysis of projects. IFAD finances projects that can have impacts on greenhouse gas emissions and biodiversity preservation. As such, in economic terms, many projects generate global social benefits from reduced greenhouse gas emissions and avoided biodiversity loss. Cases may arise where a project is not viable financially, but when including the social cost of biodiversity and the social cost of carbon, the project might become viable.
That was IFAD's René Castro talking to Philip Odebert and Jihai Kwon from FAO. Please go to ifad.org/podcasts to hear our other programmes. In episode 6, we have a special message from IFAD's president Gilbert Hongbu. In episode 5, we talked to Indigenous peoples' leaders. And in episode 4, we celebrated International Women's Day. And in episode 7, we had news on better nutrition. All that and lots more in Farms, Food, Future. But back to this edition. You might wonder what lawyers have to do with farming, but in fact, land rights is a fundamental issue if you want to secure a safe and sustainable farming future for all. The rapid growth in population in many parts of the world, coupled with land degradation and, of course, climate change, All of this contributes to increased pressure on limited land resources. This has a big impact on smallholder farmers in developing countries. Harold Liversage is the land tenure specialist at IFAD. He explained that among the worst affected areas is sub-Saharan Africa. Here, they are facing up to huge challenges with rapid urban population growth, an expected doubling in the population in the next 25 years, and forecasts show it doubling again by the end of the century. But who are the worst affected groups? I ask that of Harold.
Well, typically women, young people, indigenous communities, ethnic minorities, and other more vulnerable marginalized groups tend to be the worst affected. In most countries in the developing world, women have weaker rights to land, and young people struggle to get access to land. Also, in many countries, customary ownership of land by indigenous people, by pastoralists and other local communities who manage land under communal tenure systems often do not have adequately recognized or protected rights to this land. But again, the situation is changing with a growing recognition, I think, of customary tenure in many parts of the world, but also a growing recognition of the importance of securing women's land rights and providing land for young farmers.
Harold, can you take me through some of the measures that IFAD is working to implement to improve this situation?
Well, I think our starting point is that IFAD recognizes the central role that secure land and natural resource rights plays for poverty eradication and rural transformation. And we did a recent stocktake on what IFAD has supported over the last last 5 years or so. And we estimate that we've invested, along with our partners, around $150 million on tenure security measures in about half of the projects that we're supporting. But also, in addition to that, we've provided support through various grant-funded projects. We anticipate that this investment will continue to increase significantly over the next 5 years as part of IFAD's overall drive in increasing its investment in rural development. Now, typically, our investments in tenure security are integrated into broader agricultural rural development projects or programs. And while the investment is relatively modest, we believe that it is having a very positive impact on the overall results of our investment. Besides these investments, we're a founding member of the International Land Coalition. We house the secretariat of the coalition. The ILC is a growing network of around 250 civil society and intergovernmental organizations that focus on good land governance and are operating throughout the world. We've also provided strong, we've been a strong supporter of the African Land Policy Initiative, which had a set of framework and guidelines that were formulated under the leadership of the African Union Commission and the UN Economic Commission for Africa and endorsed at a summit of heads of state in 2009. And similarly, we've been a strong supporter in the formulation of the voluntary guidelines for the governance of tenure, which are a global set of guidelines that were developed under the leadership of the FAO and endorsed at the World Committee for Food Security in 2012. In addition to that, we've been a part of a broader grouping that successfully advocates for a set of tenure targets and indicators in the SDG framework, which I mentioned previously.
Where can you show me in practice how improved land tenure has improved other issues for communities?
For example, in the Char Development and Settlement Project in Bangladesh, land titles were provided to landless families that were living on newly accreted coastal lands, which is classified as government land. Now, people settling on this land are particularly vulnerable, not only to flooding and land erosion, but also to exploitation by local elites in the area. So support was provided under the project for dike construction and land drainage, but also titles were provided which gave people greater security to this land. And in granting these titles, particular attention was given to granting land to women-headed households, which was quite unusual in Bangladesh at the time, and to ensure that both the husband and wives were co-registered owners to land. And in fact, women's names were put first on the title, and in the event of divorce, the land remains with the woman. And the combined results of this project was that the average household income increased by around 400%, and the value of household assets, which is mainly land, increased by around 700%. Land titles were issued to about 30,000 households. And as I say, this contributed significantly to the overall project outcomes, and in particular to women's empowerment. We've done similar projects in Ethiopia and Rwanda. We've also provided support to local communities, in pastoralist communities, in semi-arid areas, for example, in Sudan, to map and demarcate the livestock routes and water points and to establish conflict resolution centers. And these, again, have helped to resolve conflicts between different users to that land and having a positive impact. And we've done similar things in terms of equitable access to irrigated land, people living in forests, and coastal fishing.
Thanks to Harold Liversage talking land rights. I'm Brian Thompson, and this is Farms, Food, Future. You can hear more podcasts by going to www.ifad.org/podcasts. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast via your favourite podcast platform, and please rate us. Coming up, we have a special message from Italy's most famous chef, Carlo Clacco. You're listening to Farms Food Future. Italian celebrity chef Carlo Clacco has been working with IFAD for 5 years now. He's been filming IFAD's popular Recipes for Change series in Morocco, Cambodia and Bhutan. Loved by the Italian and international audience, Chef Clacco has shone a spotlight on the issues facing smallholder farmers, particularly climate change. I asked him first, what are the common threats farmers are facing around the world?
The challenges are huge because we are talking about populations who first and foremost are suffering from the effects of climate change. Climate change today is no longer a way of saying or a transition phase. It is reality. And this reality, more so in some regions of the world, is even more evident and more threatening, leading to the migration of people. Entire villages move. They move towards the coastlines. They move towards the cities and abandon their territories. And abandonment of the territories accelerates climate change. We should try to stop this from happening. We should try to intervene on the people, on the families. We should try to hold on to the youth and, more than anything, help them develop a model of sustainability that is adapted to their region, their setting, so that all those families can maintain the ties with their territory. This way, we wouldn't have these huge migrations that also carry huge problems for everyone. Separations, youth leaving, families disrupted, infinite problems. So we have to try to consolidate the foundations, in other words, the families in their territories.
Each project Chef Clacco visited gave him the chance to cook a meal with a householder. This allowed him to get up close and personal with the family farmers behind the headlines. He explains what sort of solutions IFAD is supporting with these farmers to help them face up to the threats of the climate crisis.
Yes, with IFAD we have looked at each country with a different approach, because every place has its own specificity, its culture, its tradition, no? So first of all, you have to understand what is the main theme for this country, what is the main issue, and then try to help, try to solve things. What comes to mind is, for example, in Morocco, my first experience with water harvesting and land management, for which the lamb, an incredible product of that area, a label rouge, lives thanks to a variety of Artemisia that grows in the area. A field rotation was developed so that there was always fodder, And this was possible thanks to water harvesting from the study of an engineer that was then donated. That has allowed to better manage resources. In Cambodia, there's a different theme because the main crop there is rice, and small families, small communities are trying to be independent. Before, there were 3 or 4 harvests a year. Now, with climate change, they can only do one. Huge problems. In this case, with a more technical solution, a more innovative one, even though not entirely new, that of biogas, they can recover. They can put in place a recovery system that generates energy and value that can be distributed on their land, in their homes, among the family. And this makes them stronger, autonomous, overcoming that sense of precariousness that large natural events bring. In Bhutan, it was yet again different, because it is an entirely mountainous country. With its wide valleys and high altitudes, the problem there is that of raising cultivations to save them from the danger of landslides and river floods. And so you have an extreme form of agriculture carried out at a very difficult level. But even there, through special techniques, through families, through hard work, there is an effort to support these activities, to not move down the valleys, but stay at high altitude and stay protected.
The Michelin-starred chef also takes the sustainability message seriously in his own work. He tells us more.
Sustainability rhymes with responsibility, no? And sustainability and responsibility are really one thing. Sustainability means trying to operate choices that will not be invasive, that will not be counterproductive for everyone else. Responsibility instead implies acting in a way that gives a meaning to all of our actions. One of the latest projects that we are working on is, for example, one on paper. We have developed this paper, 15% of which is made from food waste. Why 15%? Because the mold cannot hold more than that. But still, recovering 15% of our waste, making paper that we can then use and which will be in turn recycled, helps generating a circular economy. That's a sustainable and responsible choice. We have to try and make choices that somehow fall back into this virtuous circle made of respect, sustainability, responsibility, gender equality. Everything has to be in there. Our economy is there, and it has to show. Also in how we use land and how we produce the raw materials that we will need. There are a multitude of ongoing projects like this, and all have to aim towards the final action, which is that of transforming. We are transformers. We take raw materials and we transform them. We process them as we try to deliver an experience. But from the very start, we can determine a lot of things from our choices. We can choose one product over another, one that maybe has a lower impact on the ecosystem. We can privilege smallholder production, which is more peculiar and unique compared to what we would call industrial agriculture. We can do many things, and we have to do them.
So, after 5 years of working with IFAD, why does Chef Krakow think governments should support IFAD's work with smallholder farmers in rural communities?
Because IFAD only wants to preserve, only tries to help, but making families autonomous, not just handing out aid. IFAD tries to deliver a know-how, a support that makes people free and able to establish an interaction of their own with other people. It is not only a technical and logistical support. It is a much deeper project that needs people who are educated and trained towards this goal, towards this value, not simply, there is a flood, so let's go and shovel mud. Sure, that's also necessary. Relief work is important, but IFAD's work is much deeper. It works within a country, within a culture, within a family.
Thanks to Italian celebrity chef Carlo Cracco speaking to Farm's Food Future. Coming up, we have more recipes on a tin can from IFAD's Recipes for Change chefs who've been speaking to us from their respective lockdowns. As we face up to the implications of the coronavirus pandemic, we've asked our Recipe for Change chef, Lance Sito, to come up with a recipe idea from store cupboard ingredients. Based in Fiji, Lance has visited an IFAD project in Tonga and knows full well how many farmers in developing countries are already living on the climate change frontline. Now they have an added threat to their health and the knock-on economic effects of the pandemic. Since 2015, IFAD's Recipes for Change chefs have been visiting projects on the ground to raise awareness of how IFAD is working with farmers to build a resilient future. Chef Sito has a special message for us and a recipe idea.
In this time of crisis, obviously, it's best to stay home and stay away from sick people and just let this virus naturally die out over a period of time. It's great to see that organisations like IFAD getting on top of the situation and assisting those countries that need the most help. And look, you know, if you're at home, it's a great time to rethink about food and nutrition. If you're fortunate enough to have a farm or fortunate enough to have a garden, grow more and think more about things that we eat. You know, are we staying healthy? Nutrition and immunity are so important at this time in the world. So, you know, if you've got a chicken at home, if you've got some ginger, some fresh leafy greens, make a soup, grab a whole chicken, you can chop it up or leave it whole, put it in a pot of cold water, smash some ginger, bring it to the boil and just let it simmer for like 45 minutes. Skim the top if you need to, add some seasoning, some salt and some pepper. And once that chicken is starting to fall off the bone, add your leafy greens in. And there you've got a very, very simple herbal chicken and ginger soup. But things like that, you know, rethink now about the food we're eating. Are we eating healthy food? And am I healthy? And is my health at the highest immunity? So that's my message for the world. Let's rethink how we eat and how we stay healthy.
Thanks to Chef Lance Sito. You can find out more about Lance at ifad.org/recipes for change and also at his own website, lanceseto.com. And we've also heard from a new member of IFAD's Recipes for Change family. I'd like to introduce you to Chef Bella Gil from Sao Paulo in Brazil. Through her books, TV shows, and 2.5 million followers on social media, Bella advocates for a holistic, conscious approach to food, as well as zero waste, healthy maternity practices, and child nutrition. Last year, she was awarded the Zero Hunger Medal by the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization for her efforts and accomplishments in the fight against malnutrition and world hunger. Here's her message to Farm's Food Future.
Hi, my name is Bella Gil. I'm a chef. I'm a nutritionist. I'm Brazilian, and I'm here to ask whoever can stay at home, please stay at home, because this is a time that we have to think more about the collective than on our own health. And when we stay at home, we are not putting other lives in danger. So please stay at home and follow the WHO recommendations to always clean your hands, clean the food that you're gonna eat when you leave the home. If you have to buy food, for example, put your mask. And I'm very happy, I'm very glad to be a partner of IFAD, this organization that it's always helping the rural population, that now we know that it's very in danger. And I'm gonna leave you a very simple recipe, but very delicious, that can also help us preserve our biodiversity. It's a millet ball with pesto sauce. So you make to make the millet, you take 1 cup of millet, put in a pan and cook it with 2 cups of water, fresh water, for 20 minutes. And you put a pinch of salt. So while the millet is cooking, you make the pesto. So for the pesto, you need 1 cup of or 2 cups of basil. If you want to mix, you can divide 1 cup of basil and the other cup of another herb like parsley or cilantro. It's very, very good. And then 1/3 of a cup of pine nuts or cashew nuts or walnut, and then a few drops of lemon juice, 1 clove of garlic. If you want, you can add 1/3 or 1/4 of a cup of Parmesan cheese, like the real one, and some salt, and 1/3 of a cup of olive oil. And you put that in the food processor and you mix it really well. And when it's done, you take the millet, mix with the pesto, make some balls, put in a baking sheet in the oven for about 30 minutes. And it's just so delicious. Kisses to all and have a safe day, a safe week, and a safe life.
Thanks to Chef Bella Gill. More on Bella at #BellaGill. All those recipes are on the IFAD website under ifad.org/recipes for change. Thanks to our producer, Francesco Manetti, and our reporters, Julia Gimaraj, Rene Castro, and Enza Falco, and everyone else who's worked on this programme. But most of all, thanks to you for listening to this episode of Farms Food Future, brought to you by the International Fund for Agricultural Development. You can find out more about any of these stories at www.ifad.org/podcast. Remember, we want to hear from you. What do you think about our stories and the issues discussed? And who do you want us to be talking to? So please get in touch with me at podcasts@ifad.org. Send us your voice or text messages to that address, and we'll be happy to play you out in the next show. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast via your favourite podcast platform, and please rate us. We'll be back at the end of June with more news fresh from the farm, but with a youth perspective. And guests presenting will be Julia Gimaraj. And once again, we'll be trying to be good for you, good for the planet, and good for the farmers. Until then, from me, Brian Thompson, and the team here at IFAD, thanks for listening.